I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I am joined by, from Lois and Clark, the new podcast of Superman, Mr. Matt Truex. What's up, Matt?
Nothing much, Zach. How are you, man?
Good, good, good. So, it's just, you were on just a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, back for a very different one. Very different. Yeah, style of Smallville here, but I told you I was open for anything, so let's get into it.
Well, you were on record for season three being your favorite season.
And it is, and there's memorable pieces in every episode. But
so this one, we're talking about Hereafter, which I'll just go ahead and jump the gun. No one says Hereafter in this episode, not that I could. I would, you know, the only person who would have said it would be Lex or Lionel, and Lionel's not even in this episode.
Don't even have Lionel.
So, yeah.
I mean, you know. I got spoiled with good Lionel and Lex last time, so it's all good.
But, you know, in Smallville, the official companion, season three by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold, writer Mark Vernheiden has this to say. We wanted to explore an idea that was brought up in season one's Hourglass, with Clark thinking that he might never die. There's a scene in that episode where he's looking at all the graves. We use this kid who sees the death moment in people. That's the exact quote. Who sees the death moment in people. I wouldn't have said it that way, Mark, but that's okay. To touch Clark and go, I don't see that for you. We were exploring the idea that Clark is an alien, and being what he is different on an almost cosmic scale. He has no death, so that takes him outside the metaphysical reach of his kid's ability. It also enabled Clark to prevent the things from happening that the kid was seeing, because he was so outside that. He was able to save Lana and Chloe. We really wanted the kid to be very tortured. It's not a great power to have, to know when someone you know is going to die and you can't do anything about it. So I immediately thought of a couple things with this. First of all, is this the dead zone, right? Isn't that what happened to the dead zone?
Oh, no, I didn't see that. Is that what that's
so,
all about?
Well, it's a Stephen King book. It's also a Stephen King movie starring Christopher Walken. And it's also a Stephen King TV show starring Anthony Michael Hall.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Like he gets.
Okay.
Like, I'm not sure though, and because it's a book first, I'm not going to say this is like a. I don't know. Final Destination, right? That's another thing.
Sure.
That's a movie.
That's one.
I don't know. Like what? Like it's hard to say. Like this is a movie they copy because it's more of a concept. You know.
I
think lots of fiction has done this. So it's like a trope of fiction, right? The Cassandra of the Greek mythology, seeing the future. So
totally nicely done. You just totally Lionel'd me. That was good.
Well, you see, son. So, you know, that's its own thing, and we'll get into it here talking about Destiny. So I think that's a really awesome concept they introduce in some really otherwise questionable episodes, like Hourglass, right? Season one. Mark Vernheiden mentioned it, right?
Yes.
When doing the podcast, right, I sit down, I'm like, oh, man, this is the episode with the graveyard. President Lex, see in the future. And you sit down like, man, this is a terrible episode.
But right, it has one cool thing.
It has some great little moments and little things, little clips that they will use forever, talking about stock footage, right? We talked about stock footage. They milked that Terminator
honestly,
3 President Lex.
It's episodes like that, which is why I love your podcast and others like it, because I'm never going to go back and watch, you know, Hereafter or Hourglass or any of those, but I'll watch it for this if I have to, or I can just listen to you and remind me of it, and you kind of save me the time, so it's great.
Well, you know, we got to do what we got to do, so I was put here for a reason. That reason is to recap Smallville. That's why I'm sent to this planet.
Undoubtedly found it. You found your purpose, and I'm just so happy for you.
I like that about Smallville, though, because that's a concept we don't explore very much in Superman, I don't think. Like, he's going to live forever. You know, that's a big weight on his shoulders.
Let's get into that. I never thought he was supposed to live forever. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, he's going to live 100 or so years past us. He'll
100 years?
Slower.
For a moment. Caught in between 10 and 20. I love Five for Fighting.
And they loved Smallville, man.
Yes.
I'm sure that made them a little bit of money.
Yeah, yeah. A longer lifespan, but not necessarily immortal, is what you're saying.
No, no, but longer and loved. Oh, well, this is trained by you.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Yeah, really?
Able to leave tall buildings and sink a bound. Able to change the course of mighty rivers. And okay, soar higher than any plane.
Destiny. Destiny and never die and stuff. Do you think he's ever going to, like, left alone, no kryptonite, doomsday, or whatever, would he die a natural death, in your opinion?
It's tough because there's invulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily immortality.
Exactly.
So even, like, because the DC animated universe is, like, my DC universe. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I'm going to show my kids one day and say, this is Batman, this is Superman. Right. Okay, everything else, this is canon.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the
everything
perfect,
else is an interpretation of this.
It's the platonic ideal of these characters.
Exactly. So if you fast forward to Batman Beyond, which I love Batman Beyond, by the mm-hmm. way, and if you guys haven't watched it or read the comics or anything, Batman Beyond is amazing, and they need to make a movie things. About it.
Yeah.
But we see older Superman, right? And he's a little older, but he's still like prime. Like he's maybe right. like in his, he's like 50, but, 50, but Bruce 60s, Wayne's like 85. Right? Yeah. You know? So I like that the scale of the aging. So I think he'll die. Now, and we can talk about it a little further when we get to that exact scene in the episode. But
yeah.
I interpreted it as, it's weird because you could say, oh, this is broadcast TV's interpretation of eternity. Right?
You could. That is totally valid.
What I took it as is he has outlived everyone on Earth. The sun has gone supernova, right? Everybody's dead. So he's flying into space back to Krypton to die. And I know that's very depressing.
I kind of like that, though, dude.
It's very nihilistic, isn't it?
Very nihilistic, but that's cool. The other thing I had was like either he goes to some alien world or whatnot, like kind of what you said, or I half remember All-Star Superman, but basically he becomes the sun at the end of that movie and just kind of does live on in eternity.
I don't like All-Star Superman.
I don't either, but that was
this is why we're friends.
Yeah,
because
it's
all
fine.
I hear about is it's the most amazing piece of comic book mythology since The Dark Knight Returns, and I'm like, I don't get it.
No, I
don't get it. Even the movie, like, I think, I don't know, it was on Sci-Fi Channel recently, and I watched it when it came out.
I didn't know they play those on TV, though. That's cool.
Yeah, they're on the Sci-Fi Channel. It's interesting to see those on TV.
Yeah, I bet.
But, and I remember the most ridiculous line, and it's at the end, it's Lois, is after Superman has gone off and died. She's like, he's not dead. He's up there fixing the sun. And right. She says it just like that. I'm like, this is ridiculous.
Yes. And then they had like that cool Art Deco design of him like fixing a sun and whatnot. Like that's what I'm remembering. But
and
yeah,
Grant
I
Morrison,
don't know what it means.
Grant Morrison's one of those guys that I really enjoy listening to him talk about comic books. I think he's brilliant. Like I would go like take a course of him talking about comic books as modern mythology.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to actually reading like his actual work, I'm like, eh. I mean, it's just me. I'm more of a Geoff Johns guy. Right?
I agree.
Hey, before we jump into this episode, though, I did want to mention a couple episodes back, Whisper on Smallville. Clark loses his vision. Yeah. He can't see. It's not a Minority Report. He loses his eyes.
I know. I like the image.
So there's and I meant to mention this at some point, but you know, you get talking, you know, whatever.
No, it's understood.
There is an episode of Lois and Clark where Superman goes blind.
There is, and we appreciate you correcting that on the record, Zach. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, so, there is.
So are you saying that's where we stole it from?
Yes, Lois and Clark did it first and blinded Superman with a dark light beam of some kind.
He looked into a black light, basically.
Yeah, and then he was fixed by infrared light at some point. But yeah, he stumbled around. Dean Cain stumbled around Metropolis for a while, too.
Dean Cain, he had a very good cross-eyed look in that episode. I'm like,
he did, yeah.
I'm like, that must have been his. He was like in the talent show in elementary school. He was like, hey guys, look what I can do, right? Because it was very good.
He too, though, like Dean accepts it the same way Tom does, pretty quickly. Of just like, well, if this is it, then I'll figure out how to be the best Superman I can be without seeing things. That's cool.
You know, me and Daniel Prue were talking about that in that episode. I'm like, that's kind of out of character for this Clark Kent to. To be so positive. Usually he's like, oh, it's all my fault, Lana. You know, so it was refreshing, actually, to see him assertive and optimistic in that episode. But yeah, and as Smallville goes on, we'll see more crossovers with Lois and Clark and even the Superboy TV show.
Oh, really?
You'd be surprised. Like, the episode where Clark and Lex get, like, trapped underground.
Yeah.
And have to work there to get out. That's based off a Superboy episode. The episode where Clark goes into Lex's mind, Fracture, in season 7,
mm-hmm.
that's based off a Superboy episode. So you can, you know, as we go forward, we'll see more of these. Now, I'm not intimately familiar with Superboy, but I am, like, familiar with at least the episodes because I tried to get through it. And
No, you're better than me. That is that and the musical, weirdly, are kind of the Superman black holes in my fandom. I've never jumped in. And I'm a big musical fan. I will one day. But
I have the record for that. I found it.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I think we talked about this. Books.
Yeah, because of Patrick Cassidy and his, like, grandfather.
That was it. Yep. We talk about Superman too much.
Oh, man. Speaking of, let's get into talking about this episode of Smallville hereafter.
These visions, when they hit, what are they like? It's hard to describe. It's like a curtain's being pulled back just long enough for me to see the moment they die. Have you ever been able to stop one of these visions from coming true? Never. My dad and I did everything we could. We called the police, the paramedics, begged people to take us seriously. But no matter what we did, the visions always came true. That's how you knew Mr. Altman was going to kill himself. Except he survived. Because of you. How did you do it? I had a vision of you too when you grabbed me in the hallway. What do you mean? What'd you see? Like you don't have an end like other people. It's like you live forever. Come on, Jordan. You're wrong. No. Maybe that's why you were able to save Mr. Altman. Nobody's ever been able to stop one of the deaths before. Maybe you can do it again for Megan.
Hereafter is the 12th episode of Smallville's third season. It aired on February 4th, 2004. It was written by Mark Verheiden and Drew Z. Greenberg and directed by Greg Beeman and James Marshall. So this is a rare instance where we have two directors, you know, kind of like Solo, a Star Wars story.
That also feels like why this feels like two different episodes at one point. It then becomes an Adam episode like halfway through, you know.
It didn't feel cut and paste to me, but it sounds like it is more to you. But
it did to me, yeah.
James Marshall took over direction hereafter after Greg Beeman became seriously ill. Halfway through the shoot. So he wasn't fired or anything like that.
Right. So it's more a Zack Snyder to Joss Whedon situation.
Yeah, it's not Disney here. I mean, it's more WB, you know, the much more respectful way to do it.
Right.
But so the episode opens up, and as you might have guessed us singing earlier, we have 100 years by Five for Fighting. And I became a Five for Fighting fan, I think, as we all did, through their song Superman, right?
On the Talon Mix, man. Yep.
In a funny Reggie. I really liked that song, and I became a Five for Fighting legit fan. Like, I'm more of a song guy, especially in this day and age, right, with iTunes. And I'll get, like, individual songs, be like, who's your favorite artist? I'm like, I don't know, I like songs. Yeah. But Five for Fighting, I actually bought several Five for Fighting CDs, you know, back
impressive,
2000s, you know. So so they were legit. I kind of like that kind of folk, kind of like light rock. I don't know which category they are, but I like it, you know. And it's like, great to hear them off the top of the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know they did at some point. When did they use Superman? Was that season one?
They use it Superman season one. They used it at the end of Stray, the episode with Ryan, the
Stray.
First episode
with
him.
Yeah.
Where he gives Clark his comic books, then he drives away. And honestly, I was like, I mean, I'm glad they used it. I don't know if that's the... They could have used it somewhere better.
Yeah.
But, anyway. Five for Fighting never showed up at the prom.
No.
Or at the Talon or anything, but
they never returned the party planning committee's calls. You know,
yeah. But they did have a presence on the show, and it was good to hear them off the top. And I think it definitely fit this episode.
The show does this a few times though too. Like they had Lifehouse in season one, and then they came back in season four too, or like their new song. Like it's kind of cool.
You know, never use Three Doors Down with Kryptonite.
No, it's a shame too.
Which
that
is
been
like,
a good,
if there
like,
was ever
Lexus
a show,
pissed. Yeah.
I think they might have talked about using that as the main theme at some point.
I would have been cool with that too. I mean, I would miss Save Me Now.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this episode, right? We're here in Five for Fighting, and we're running through the woods as you do in your gym class.
Yep. Best friends Pete and Lana hanging out like usual.
Yeah. So Pete and Lana and all the rest of the Smallville like class are wearing these Smallville official, you know, hoodies and stuff.
Right.
Did
you have the gym shirt?
No, I did not. Did you?
I did.
Okay.
Sorry.
Do you still have it?
Yes, but it's gigantic. So. No.
Well, so they're all, you know, they're on the red Smallville hoodies, and then we see this one guy in this gray hoodie, right?
Yep.
And he's like starts behind him, but he's like speeding up in front of him. And Pete and Lana like, what's up with this guy? Like, wasn't that a weird look they gave each other? Like, they're so confused by this guy running in front of them.
and that was the moment too where I just went like, oh, you guys don't hang out with each other at all, but like now you're like so friendly that you're giving each other like, you know, officey looks. It was just very strange.
Well, then we, you know, they get back to the football field. Yeah. It's just, again, I was
the high school's stadium, yeah.
I was in marching band, right? So I didn't have to take gym classes.
Nope.
So I don't think it just lets you run around. Like, it's a small town, I guess, but it's just odd to me. Like, where is this in relation to the school?
It's a path behind the school. Our school would do something similar, actually. Yeah. I was kind of cool with that. But, yeah, we didn't have a giant, gorgeous stadium that they reuse all the time here. But
exactly. Well, and him not having the sweatshirt is kind of shorthand for... He's a new student. So I'm like, okay, I like that. Because what's a criticism I have of this show, especially as we go further and further? It's like, oh, it's Trevor. You know Trevor? He's been here since the... Like, who the hell's Trevor?
We've always loved Trevor.
Been watching this show for 4 years. I've never seen Trevor.
Yep.
Don't tell me this guy's been in your class or anything.
It's kind of just an artsy beginning with like what you're saying. There's no words, but it's communicated.
It could have been in black and white, right? It could have been student film.
Even the stadium with like the trees and all that, it's really cinematic. It looks pretty.
Definitely. So which director do you think did that? No, I don't know.
I assumed the first guy, and then it just kind of...
They come back. The coach is like, all right, good run, everybody. And Lana goes up to him and apologizes, or not apologizes, but expresses sympathy for...
Right.
Thoughts and prayers, condolences for the passing of someone, right? It's like kind of vague, right? He's like, well, nothing we can do now. It's like, okay, well, we'll come back to this later, right?
A lot.
Yeah, little did we know. We're like, oh, an adult has speaking lines? We'll come back to this situation. Lana goes over to like the water cooler and Jordan, by the way.
Cross, yes.
Jordan Cross, whose real name...
Is
Joseph Cross.
Cross,
which I thought was funny. So he's the guy we saw right in the gray sweatshirt. They have a little meeting here by the water cooler. I did want to say a couple things about Joseph Cross.
Jump in.
First of all, I get a real Grant Gustin vibe from him. Did you?
Yep, I get that, and Aaron Ashmore, and other Jimmy, and just a lot of like those guys. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But I'll say this: he looks like a high schooler.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So credit there. He looks kind of like goofy, like I'm still going through puberty.
Yeah.
And I think, you know what? He did a really good job. He's one of my favorite guest stars on the show. What did you think of his whole performance this episode?
I agree. I think he's, especially like when he's trying to tell the girl later on, jumping ahead to, he wants to walk her home. And he's so desperate to be like, no, it's not what you think. I need to be there. I loved him acting that. Because of course he looks like a creep if you don't know crazy things are happening.
Right.
I really liked him a lot. I thought I recognized him from something, but couldn't figure it out.
Well, have you ever seen Jack Frost with Michael Keaton?
I have.
He is the kid, or one of the kids.
Wow.
From Jack Frost.
Is he Keaton's kid?
In the movie.
What? No, I mean, like, he's the star that's like, my dad's a snowman. Oh, my God. That's funny.
Him and Kelly Preston are the kids.
Wow.
So, again, kids, I don't know if I mentioned it on this podcast. I know I mentioned it. I love bringing up this fact, kind of word to the wise. If you're going to go look for this Jack Frost movie, be warned, there is another Jack Frost movie.
Yes.
That is a horror movie that is very different from the family-friendly Michael Keaton, My Dad's a Snowman.
Right, and cost about $5,000 to make, if I'm correct.
And also, Joseph Cross, he was in Lincoln in 2012.
Oh, the Spielberg movie? I didn't see it, but that's good for him, man.
Yeah, I don't know what part he played. I mean, I saw it, I don't really recall, but you know, good for him, still getting work.
Yeah, He joins Amy Adams as like Smallville MVP. That's pretty good.
He looks like he's gonna have a baby face forever. So good for him.
Hey.
But anyway, so him and Lana are talking here, and they're getting some water, and then like she hands him a cup of water, and then we get this flash, right? And in classic Smallville fashion, it's like overexposed and handheld camera. Like they have this. I like that the continuity of this is a flashback or a flash forward or whatever. That's what we see on Smallville.
Premonition, whatever it's supposed to be.
And what do we see here, Matt?
We see a very, very nice and calm lady just looking peaceful in her very, very white room with her long white hair and her clear crystal necklace around her. Oh, my God, it's Lana Lang!
She got the necklace back from Clark.
And somehow lived through all the show. Like, they committed to that early. That was impressive.
Well, did they, though? because, as we discover, Clark changes destiny, so all that is for naught.
Right.
Just this one day.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
No, you're right. I was already trying to reconcile it with, like, season 11 comic stuff of, like, okay, after she did that, she went home and found a guy and got old and that.
Not Pete Ross, by the way, because I remember people were speculating, because we see that she's, you know, old lady. It's obviously she's probably in her 80s or something.
Yeah.
It's her time. It's Jordan.
The way
says
Jordan
later,
says it is really nice. Yeah. It was fine. It was okay. Yeah.
And there's, like, an old guy there. We don't see his face, but he's sad because obviously she's passed away. Obviously they're a married couple.
Sure.
But he's a white guy. So that
very
rules
much
out.
Not Pete. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say this lady is very much also a white lady.
Good
they
point.
Could have maybe got someone to look a little more like Kristen Kirk. I'm just saying, throwing that there. But in the comic books, or some iterations of the comic books, Pete Ross ends up with Lana Lang.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are like, when are we going to see that on the show, man? Pete and Lana? I'm like, look, guys, they have no chemistry. Like, just let that go. Like, Pete and Chloe, maybe, right? But not Pete and Lana.
I think this episode is the closest they ever got, just running together.
Just
and
running
each other
together,
looks.
Exchanging a look.
The romance was real, man.
That was the most meaningful look they ever exchanged.
Exactly.
So, just freaks Jordan's out, and he runs off. But before he can run off entirely, the coach stops, like, hey, good run out there today. How are you liking the... But, you know, as typical coaches do, he's like, slaps his shoulder or something like that, right? So then Jordan gets another vision, and it's of this coach stepping out into the traffic and getting hit by a car.
Yeah.
And
this
again,
car just speeding down this little pedestrian lane here, but okay.
Clearly, there's a guy right there. Like, no attempt is made to slow down.
There's you can veer anywhere. There's no one else on the road.
He's dead, though. He falls over. Someone, like, comes, and they make a point to show someone, like, coming and checking his pulse. He's dead.
Right. You know?
So then Jordan, we cut back to Jordan. He, like, that really freaks him out. Then he really starts running away. Which, you know, and imagine being this kid, right? As we learn more about him, like, whenever he touches someone, he sees their moment of death.
Yeah, that's tough. And especially when you're just, you don't even know you're about to be touched, and that violent of a thing just pops into your head. But I almost feel like he would be a little relieved when he touches somebody like Lana. And it's just like, okay, she was, you know.
Oh, you're going to die in 50 years. Ah!
Right, exactly. It's not as bad almost, but I've also never had that happen. So it's probably creepy every time.
How familiar with you are you with the X-Files?
Pretty familiar.
So there is a season 3 episode called Clive Bruckman's Final Repose. What's his name? It has not Boyle. Morgan Edge from Lois and Clark. What's his name?
Oh, I'm thinking of something
Boyle. Peter Boyle.
Oh, I am thinking of that. Yes, Peter Boyle. Bill Church from Lois and Clark.
There you go. I call him not Morgan Edge, but you got it.
Yeah.
So he can see people's moments of death.
Mm-hmm.
And he cannot change them. And right. I don't think he has to, like, touch you or anything. He just meets you and kind of knows. It's kind of like a psychic thing. And that's also what this reminded me of, because he's like, look, man, I tried for years. I tried to stop stuff. Couldn't do it. Whatever, right? And that's one of the best episodes of The X-Files.
Yeah. Like, very famously. That's beautifully done.
Either he got Peter Boyle, he either got nominated or won an Emmy for it or whatever.
I think you're right.
It's a great
episode.
But Darren Morgan wrote that. He's my favorite X-Files writer. Anyway.
Anyway. X-Files gone forever, maybe?
Maybe. I mean, I actually liked the ending. I thought it was fun.
I did too.
I'm glad they went micro instead of macro.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
It's like they tried that with season 10. Like, oh, the world's ending. And like, it's not really X-Files. Let's give some revolution to these characters. You know, they're going to live happily ever after with a nice new human baby.
Yep.
And their alien hybrid baby will be out there doing his thing.
Doing his thing.
Spoilers for the X-Files season 11.
I was sitting here the day after my birthday. I was really sick and nursing a head cold, and I got to the end of that, and when Mulder plugs the cigarette smoking man, just like without even thinking for a second, I literally cheered here in my apartment alone. It's just like,
no more
yes,
conversation, no. Just shoot him. Yeah. Pushes him into the water. So
yep, kill him. I don't care.
But I think they should just leave well enough alone. I loved season 11. Like I feel like every episode was really good. Of course, the Chris Carter ones were the weakest ones.
Yeah, but there was nothing offensive in it, for lack of a better word.
Like season 10, there were some serious offensive stuff there.
Various levels.
But I really enjoyed season 11. I'm glad it happened. And let's just move on to something. Go watch Fringe, everybody.
Yeah,
if you want
more
X-Files, Fringe is a more condensed, better version of the X-Files. So just go check it out.
I will check that out eventually. Sorry, it took us away from Smallville.
Back in Canada, where they film all these shows.
Yeah.
So we cut to Jordan. He's you know, coming out of school. And who is his student mentor but Clark Kent?
Clark Kent.
Of course he would be.
Of course he
is. Of course they would pick him. right? I mean, he did the same thing when Chloe says that, you know, when she transferred there right. like a couple years ago. Right. But Clark gives him a map of Smallville High School. Did you find this amusing?
I did, actually.
Show but also, campus.
There's part of me, too, that's like, you know, when I started college, I needed a map of where we were going
yeah.
and all the
different... College.
And also, like, it wasn't a... True, but it was also, like, not a campus situation. We were in the middle of a city, so you had to know where everything was. But, yeah, you're right. All one building, it's a bit much. But if you have a giant stadium, what they have a giant pool, you could get lost very easily. Do we ever see the library? It might be huge.
No, we're at the torch doing research.
Right,
all the time.
Right.
But
we see
but
we
do see it. We see a computer lab in this episode, which we'll get to if we ever get there. But let's.
Sorry.
No, this is fun. So. So they're talking, and Jordan notices the coach, Coach Altman. I spent the whole time thinking his name is Altman, but I looked
it's
it up.
Altman.
Apparently, his name is Altman with a T.
Nicely.
So he
I
goes
just
out
kept calling him Coach. So you're good.
Yeah, Coach. So he goes out into the street. Is gonna get it, like it's happening today, right?
Right. Oh,
so
God,
he goes
it's
out,
today.
It's today, not today, of all days. So he goes into the street and he's like doing the whole like take me away, like it's the
yeah.
accepting of death pose, right?
Yeah, just arms out.
And then Clark sees it, super speeds into the way, saves him. And he's alive, so he's Clark has clearly changed destiny. And Jordan's like, whoa, because obviously we get the impression like this has never happened before. You know, he spells
right.
it out later, but it's a big deal. And I like this is a very effective hook to start the episode, I think.
I agree. Again, it opens up a lot of destiny questions and stuff we might not want to get into, but I think it's a cool change. And obviously, we were just saying Joseph Cross really sells it when his mm-hmm. reaction of seeing Clark do that is... Without any words of what his powers are, we know by the end of this trailer, or teaser, excuse me, what his powers are and what the weird thing is that just happened for him, you know?
And I will say one thing about Greg Keane, who plays Coach Altman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he was a regular, but he was in 21 episodes of Dead Like Me, which I thought was appropriate,
oh,
considering
yeah.
the subject nature of this episode.
Fair enough. Another one I've never seen, but I hear is very good.
Is that Brian Fuller or is that
Brian
Six Feet
Fuller.
Under?
Yeah, Brian Fuller. Like the poster is almost like Abbey Road Beatles and one... people crossing the street and one of them is the Grim Reaper like blowing a bubble.
Then what
yep.
what's 6 feet under? Is that also Brian Fuller?
No, that's HBO Adam Ball, I think is his name.
Okay. You can understand the confusion though.
Oh, totally.
So we cut to the main credits. We come back. We have a hospital visit.
Yay.
Plus one.
Yay.
Lana and someone named Megan come to visit the coach at the hospital.
Right. Another old friend, Megan.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, this is a Trevor. I'm going to use Trevor will be the name.
Okay.
From here on out, guys, when there's like a person that was like, hey, Trevor, man, you know Trevor? it's like, well, I like, so they come to the hospital. Clark's there in the waiting room. I guess he had, you know, come to the hospital with the coach. It's a very Clarkian thing to do.
Right.
Lana goes off to talk to Clark. Megan goes to see the coach. And I like how Clark's like, hey, I didn't realize you and Megan... We're so close. So I'm like, thank
with
you.
The coach, yeah.
I appreciate the attempt to explain. You know, they didn't say, oh, yeah, it's Megan. It's Trevor.
Right. Right.
So they were on the cheerleading squad in middle school,
yes.
junior high, as they say on the show. I didn't go to a junior high. I went to a middle school. What about you? What did they call
it? It was all K through 8, actually, for me. So I was in the
oh,
same
look
school
at you.
For many, many years. Yeah.
I always thought it was junior high because Clarissa Explains It All is like my favorite show when I was growing up. And
yep.
Liz Joan Hart was like my first childhood crush. And they went to Thomas Tucker Junior High. I remember that. And I was like,
nicely
I can't wait to
done.
Go to junior high. But I went to a middle school, so whatever. My life is a lie. So they have some exposition here for mm-hmm. us, as we need to know. And as we know, Lana was a cheerleader at
yep.
the beginning of this show when she was a freshman, right?
Yep.
But she quit because reasons.
Of a tape from her mother or something, yeah.
To be her own woman, you
mm-hmm.
know? It's like, okay, I mean, that's cool, whatever.
It's been going well, yeah.
Let's do some math here. They are... They are juniors in high school, which
okay.
is 11th grade.
Okay. 11th grade. You're like, what, 16, 17?
16. Well, let's
okay.
see, 15. Oh, no, on this show, we're going to say 17. I give them the benefit of the doubt. So we
okay.
say we 17. Say 17.
I'm writing this down. Keep going.
Because it's very important for Lana to be 18 next season. So
right.
so Lana, Megan, I think Julie or Julia... I forget the daughter's name. One of
that
the two.
That was the coach's daughter?
Yeah, I'll use them
okay.
interchangeably. They were all on cheerleading squad together in junior high. And so the daughter,
yep.
after a end-of-year party,
mm-hmm.
she got hit by a car because she was walking home or something, right?
Okay.
So then she got taken to the hospital. She was in bad shape. Doctor said she wasn't going to make it. The coach was holding out hope. Right. But they took her on. They took her off life support last month.
Yes.
Is what Lana says. So Matt, you guys can't see it, but Matt, he's like scribbling notes.
In my Daily Planet notebook.
Oh, very good. Free cred. Nerd cred win right there. So
do we want to call them in eighth grade when that happens?
Yeah, we're going to give them, again, much like the benefit of the doubt of them being 17 this year, we're going to say they were in eighth grade.
They were 14. So she's been in a coma for 3 years.
2.5 to 3 years in a coma.
Yeah.
And they just took her off life support. Does that seem logical to you?
I don't know, because I know people are in comas for a while. I guess it's all about brain function, right? Or higher brain function,
mm-hmm.
which I think they said she, I assume, was brain dead if they took her off life support. Mm-hmm. But,
you want to talk about destiny? Let's talk about euthanasia.
Yeah, well, he should touch her and see what happens. But, yeah, that seems like a while, and just personally for me, like, that's a long time to keep it. A 14-year-old on life support, but
what? So Drew Z. Greenberg wrote this episode.
He also did
a lot of work on Buffy and stuff, mm-hmm. right? He also wrote Slumber earlier this season. What does that episode have? That has a girl who was, if that episode is to be believed, was in a coma for 6 years.
Weird.
So Drew, man, like, is that like that's your thing? Like girls in comas? Like is that like your one trick pony in the writing these scripts? I know. I've never seen Buffy, to be honest with you.
Oh, really?
It's
great, obviously. He then went on to, like, he is a big screenwriter now, right?
I know he's worked on lots of, Arrow.
And The Martian, I think he did? Or am I thinking of another ex-Buffy writer?
Another Drew Z. Greenberg.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there. But you're right, yeah, he was on Smallville and Buffy, obviously. Buffy and Dexter and all that, too. And he's on S.H.I.E.L.D. now, the poor guy. Never mind.
Oh, good. Oh. I'm glad we agree. Matt, you and I agree on so much of these nerd opinions. So I like it.
Yeah.
You mentioned speaking of Arrow, I am wearing a Oliver Queen You Have Failed the City shirt today.
Yes, you are.
I have to, since you mentioned your Daily Planet Journal, I have to keep up appearances. So.
Understood. Of course.
So that's contractually have to be nerdier than my guests. So after Clark and Lana are done talking,
mm-hmm.
Lana goes into the hospital. Megan is talking to the coach. Now, Megan... This is our last, like, I got to talk about the guest stars this episode, but Megan, her name in real life is also Megan.
What's going on here?
Spells it M-E-G-H-A-N. But yeah, there's a lot of crossover between the guest stars and the names, right, the stars. Do you think they just, like, had to blank, like, all right, whoever we cast, that's going to be their name?
Maybe. I don't know. Like, it feels like they usually do that in sitcoms and stuff, you know, to keep the
like Creed Branton.
Close. Like Creed, like a lot of people in The Office, yeah.
Right.
Even just, like, Ray, Jerry, stuff like that.
True.
No, I thought it was really, really weird that they would do that here. It kind of takes me out of it, honestly, once I learned about it. But
so she looked familiar to me. I could not place her, but I was like, I bet she went on to do something else. You know, if not on the CW, then somewhere, right?
Did you check? Or?
I did check. She has been on a lot of TV shows. South Beach, never heard of it, but she's in 9 episodes of that.
Okay.
True Justice. I think I might have seen a billboard for that once. She's in 13 episodes of that. Intelligence, that show with Josh Holloway, Post Lost.
I know none of these shows so far.
She was in all 13 episodes of that.
Okay.
You will know this one. She played Little Red Riding Hood on Once Upon a Time.
Okay. I have heard of this small little show. Yes.
And she was in almost 50 episodes of that. So I think that's probably where my mind connected her to.
Okay.
But
did
she
you
have
watch
a...
that Once
no,
Upon
I,
a Time?
I don't.
Okay.
So she confesses basically that her and Julia got in a fight, and that's why she left the party and was out on the road walking home and got hit by that car. So not, to quote Smallville, not exactly a smoking gun.
No.
But but if you're looking for someone to blame, that's a perfect end. And clearly this coach is looking for someone to blame. Lana comes in, and they both knew about it. She's like, oh, no, it wasn't your fault, you know. And he's sedated. He can't even hear you. And they leave. And, of course, like, immediately his eyes open. Like, oh.
Yep.
They're in trouble now because this guy has serious problems. Like, he tried to kill himself to, like, be with his deceased daughter. That's messed up.
Yeah.
You know? The guy's already unhinged. I do believe. I know it's absurd. We joke about the lengths that guest stars. Was he gonna kidnap these girls and burn them alive? I'm like, I don't know. The guy's clearly unhinged already, so it wasn't unbelievable.
Yeah, he's you're right. He's given over his life, I guess, at this point to But just also, there's a big jump for me between killing yourself because you're depressed about your daughter and then deciding, you know what, I'm going to kill a couple more 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, take them with me. You know, that's true.
What about their parents, man?
Yeah, God. That's a real big jump, dude.
Yeah. What's Henry Small going to think when Lana dies?
Right. But I do love that it's just enough that, yeah, that was a crappy thing that happened that night. But they're also clear morally of any wrongdoing, really, here. It's just,
yeah, it wasn't like, oh, you were behind the wheel. I know what you did last summer situation. Mm-hmm. It was a more like, hey, look, we got in a fight and she left, but yeah. That's all there is to it. So
it was the cleanest version of that you could do.
The cleanest version, yeah. Maybe the 2% guilt, I don't know.
Right, right.
Anyway, cut to Jordan at Smallville High School. I assume this is the next day. And
you tell me, yeah.
Okay. I don't know, man. They don't even know. So I liked how he's maneuvering through this busy staircase, like trying to avoid bumping people. I'm like, that's very clever. That tells you a lot about this. Like you said, like without saying anything, you figure out what's going on with this guy, right?
He's roguing, basically, mm-hmm. right? He's afraid to touch people.
But then we see this hand reach out and touch his shoulder. Right? And look at this flash. And we see this red CGI fabric fluttering. Yes. Fluttering. And then we keep zooming in, and we see this yellow shape with lions on it. And then we see that it's the Superman cape, and it's flying through space, and he's flying through something that maybe a sun might be
supernova,
eternity.
Something, who knows?
I don't know. But seriously, this was amazing to see as a young man watching Smallville. This is the first hint we've ever had at the real costume on
the
show.
Suit. Yeah.
What were your feelings seeing this, Matt?
I get chills talking about it, right? Like just as a kid, even looking back at it, it's not a great effect or anything, but every week we would chime in for just little things like that, and when they gave it to us, it was the suit, you know? And I loved that it had the S on the back. Mm-hmm. It's weird
as
that
it should. As it
as
should.
It should. It's weird that it's just that like thick black line, like clearly just kind of copy pasted from the comic, you know.
Right.
But no, it's the most exciting thing that had happened on the show, really, except for Christopher Reeve, really. But that was huge as far as Superman Easter eggs goes.
Absolutely. Writer Mark Verheiden had this to say about it in The Companion. The cape came after a lot of discussion. We were trying to figure out the best way to show his cosmic lifespan. We thought of having Clark lying there with someone who looks like Lex dumping kryptonite on him and killing him. That would have been dark.
Ooh.
We spent quite a while mulling over the different possibilities, and I think it was Miles who came up with the idea of the cape. It's a great iconic moment. It's the first time in the show you ever saw any hint of the costume. If you're a Superman fan and really into the iconography of this stuff, you got chills down your spine. Well, there you go.
Yes,
he was right. We did.
Absolutely right.
That interests me that they thought, oh, we'll have some like vague Lex is killing Superman scene.
That's way too much to commit to, guys.
Yeah, that's like, well, let's suspect. It would have been the white. They probably had the white suit in storage, right? They're like,
right,
pull that
right.
out. Michael, put this back. Put the glove on.
Get the glove. Get the glove.
I'm glad they went this way because then it opens this, as we were talking about when the episode started, it's kind of open to interpretation. I know Jordan seems to think, it's like you never die, but he's not going to think Clark's going to go fly into space, right?
No, and just live and hang out in space for eternity.
Yeah, and because, you know, much like you, I don't consider Superman immortal, so I didn't take the whole, like, it's like you never die.
But I know there is a faction of fans, and maybe even Grant Morrison, who does see him in more a spiritual Masonic way. So I see that, you know, folks that are into that, it is a very nice poetic end for him. You know, he just flies off into whatever. But yeah, in the sci-fi practical sense, it leaves a lot to debate, which is fun.
Yeah. And yeah, I think I still will interpret it. I'll go against the grain with the show explanation, and I'm going to interpret it like, all right, everyone he's ever loved and cared about has died, and he's just flying back to Krypton to die in kryptonite poisoning, which is
I'll
a very
that.
Depressing end, but...
Sure, but also I like that his death isn't so much his own physical death. It's the fact that his life on Earth is over here.
There you go. Look at that.
Hey, we did it.
You're a regular Grant Morrison there.
Thanks.
And by the way, they reused this flashback in reverse to try and trick us or something.
Right.
In Absolute Justice when Dr. Fate touches Clark.
That's it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we don't see anything of the suit till Martha gives it to him.
Martha makes it in season 9 finale, and then Jor-El takes it away.
Right.
And says, nope. So we cut back from the cape, flash forward, and Clark and Jordan continue to have their conversation. But he tells his line to Jordan. Well, Jordan says, yeah, no, it's no problem. I just wish my dad hadn't been there to see it, which is a perfectly logical comment to make.
Sure.
You know, because, yeah, if the dad is obviously hesitant to let Jordan go to public school. Like, first, second, third, I don't know, he'd been there a week, I don't know.
Right.
I think he said he started
Dad's also, like, hesitant to take a shower. When dad shows up, it's like, oof, dad's had a rough...
Dad's a little rough. Dad's
rough
a little
couple
rough.
Years, yeah.
I do like the character, though, and we'll talk about that a little later. I do like where they go with that character.
I do, too.
Clark has a really stupid line. He says, he's like, well, you can tell him that Smallville High is really this exciting. I'm like, are you serious? Have you
people
gone here the last
week.
2.5 years? People are dying. Teachers, students, you
Your
know?
Friend just got trampled by a horse. The other one wound up in an insane asylum for a couple weeks. Like,
oh, man.
It's a rough town.
You just got robbed, and you
right.
went blind last week or 2 weeks
uh-huh.
ago or whatever. Lana and Chloe just tried to kill each other last week. In
Months ago, you were living in Metropolis under an assumed name, robbing thing, you know? Like,
oh, you know what? I wonder how long Lana and Chloe's suspensions lasted from the leap, because they got suspended for that knockdown drag-out fight.
Right.
Which, by the way, is, as I mentioned in the last episode, probably my favorite fight in all of Smallville.
I can't wait to listen to Delete. You just, the way we're recording, I just listened to Whisper the other day, but I can't wait for Delete.
So, a week passed. That's,
sure.
They were gone for a week. That's the week Jordan came. That's why Lana hadn't seen her before. It all ties together.
Great. Oh, good. They did all this math.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure they did. Just like this girl's been in a coma for 3 years. I know you're gonna let me down, Smallville writers. But see, Clark's like, oh, it's like, hey, it's like you kind of knew what was gonna happen, you know? And he's like, I gotta go. And I'm like, hey, Clark, how does it feel to have someone have a secret and them not tell you? You know, I thought like he's totally being Lex in the situation, right?
Totally. But unlike Lex, he's figured it out in 5 minutes. You know, like Clark's been doing this for 3 years now. He sees he can put the freaky puzzle together very nicely.
Greatest criminal mind of our time. Yeah. You know? Meanwhile, but we cut to, the B plot of this episode?
Sure.
Batman's having a nightmare about his parents' murder. Did you watch this episode with it in mind of him being Batman this time?
I tried, but this is the one where it's toughest.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the one. Lana's like closing up the talent. She's like, wah, wah, all this like yelling and crashing and all this stuff. And they really need to, you know, put some more insulation in the walls there in the talent.
Yeah.
She goes upstairs. This is coming from Adam's apartment. He's having a nightmare. He, like, kicks her, you know.
Into a wall.
She had just... They had both... Let's remember, they had both just got out of physical therapy for months.
So it's good to see strength in his leg again. That's exciting.
Yeah. So he's been working
him.
The quads and, you know, the...
Yep.
He's good. So he wakes up from a nightmare. She's like, oh, that was a crazy nightmare. You want to talk about it? He's like, no. He's like, I'm going to go put a shirt on. And he walks off. that's pretty much the... Just of that scene again,
yeah,
very odd. And I want to keep commenting on the last couple episodes. I've been commenting on this, like their relationship to each other, very odd, very ill-defined.
Yeah, whether they're hooking up or not,
like,
and,
what is going on? How old is Adam?
Right,
like is he high school or is he an adult? Like, what's going on here?
I have that question with a lot of her boyfriends coming up. But yeah,
likes older men clearly.
Yes, yes, she does.
So we cut to, I guess, the same day. Let's think about this.
Like.
This is not in my notes. I just thought about it.
Yep.
Because let's spend even more time talking about every scene in detail. So that was clearly the talent is closing at night.
Right. And it's presumably the night before she was in the hospital.
She wasn't in. She went and visited.
That's what I mean. But, she was there.
We cut back to Smallville High School. And it seems to me like it's the same day. Like, Clark might have been wearing the same clothes.
Right.
I mean, flannel you can wear more than once, especially if it's not hot outside. But not the same day.
When he goes to the torch, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's sitting there, and Chloe and Pete come in like, hey, you want to hear some news? We got some gossip. And he's like, I'm not interested in this. I'm above this. You know?
Yeah. So, I'm in Adam-free zone.
Yeah, Adam-free zone. That's the terminology he uses. Now, I like the maturity on Clark's part not to want to hear every last thing about Lana's personal life. Although it's just a writing trope to keep Chloe from telling him about, hey, this Adam guy's got some weird stuff going on. Like, she almost tells him, she's like, oh, wait, I forgot. Adam-free zone? Never mind. I'm not going to tell you this guy's shooting up in the computer lab.
You might want to know that, but okay. But it's also a false maturity from him. Like, he just doesn't want to deal with it today. He's got this other, I found this other freaky thing. Let's talk about this. You know?
Yeah. His attention span is elsewhere, is diverted
right.
elsewhere. They pretty much decide, okay, there's this new kid. He predicted a roller coaster disaster, right? Clark's done his research.
Right.
Even though he's very like, why don't people just let me live my life and not investigate my secrets? Like, he is all on top of this guy. Like, he is like such a hypocrite as Clark Kent here.
Yeah.
Right?
Ace reporter, you know?
Yes, that's right. This is where it starts. So Chloe has a line. Oh, it's nice to be a Woodward to your Bernstein.
To your Bernstein
again.
Yeah.
And I'm sure like the entire Smallville audience was like, "What?" You know, I mean, I'm pretty. You know, I like history and I, you know, study stuff. But that's obviously Watergate, Nixon. Right. That's what we're talking about here, folks.
I get it now, but yeah, back in the day, it was just...
Yeah, I was like, what?
Chloe's cute. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, that shows you that they're... And he, like, smiles. I'm like, they're bad. They're good. You know, yeah. they've gone through all the drama with, you know, the Lionel and the lying and the investigation. And that'll last for a few episodes until she gets hit with that, like, truth serum and then starts asking everybody all these questions. So, character development on Smallville.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, this is crazy, Matt.
What?
I wrote down the time code of when Lex first showed up in this episode.
Yes.
We have been talking for almost an hour.
Okay.
God. We are 12 minutes into this episode, I swear to God. We were gonna try and speed it up.
I've got the line, oh yeah, Lex is in this show.
Yes, that's exactly what I said. I was like, oh, Lex is also in this show.
Right.
But that I wrote 12 minutes to see how long it took.
That's impressive. It felt, honestly, it felt like 20. It felt
like as long
forever.
As this conversation has been. But yes. I know you guys are enjoying it, so don't act like you're not. Lana shows up at the mansion. Lex wants to talk to her about these disturbances at the Talon that have been going on. She's like,
right.
Adam just had a bad dream. Okay, let it go. And then he's like, well, that'd be fine if it wasn't, you know, the first time. And apparently there's like a string of like incidents and reports. I did find it interesting. He mentioned that neighbors had complained to the police. What neighbors?
Same thing. Yep. Yeah, unless there's just other people living on top of flower shops and stuff.
People
like
living
that.
On top of the jewelry store. Yeah. On top of the antique store.
Which,
you know?
I guess like a main street like that. I'm thinking of my old town, and there were a few buildings that had apartments up top or whatever. So maybe, but I'd be more like he's looking at the laundry list of. I guess he's had to replace windows and stools.
Furniture.
And stuff.
Yeah, lamps.
I like that she was trying to just hide that in the paperwork. And
yeah, so. Like very sneaky, Lana.
It's Luther. Yeah. He won't look at it. It's fine.
Yeah. He says, well, money doesn't mean anything.
Right.
So, it's basically Lex. Well, I mean, I don't know what everybody's intentions are here, but basically, yeah, Lana, maybe you shouldn't let this guy you barely knew move into, you know, the business that you work at.
Yeah.
So they just, this is the whole, well, there have been hints that there's more to Adam than meets the eye, but this one especially. You know, it's like, hey, there's something weird going on with this guy. And, like, we have Lex, and then we have Chloe fighting stuff out and confronting Lana about it later. Because in our next scene, Chloe is just, you know, walking down the hallway at Smallville High School.
Right.
Decides to go into what I can only assume is the computer lab.
Okay, that's what you're saying the computer lab was.
Because it wasn't the torch. Adam is deciding to shoot up in this room. So explain this scene to me, Matt.
Nope, can't. Why he would stop, open doors and all, I just don't get it. He just needed to be seen doing drugs at himself, you know?
At himself. Lots of contrivance in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like people are in the exact spot they need to be for the next thing to happen, as opposed to it organically happening. Chloe, being smart, uses like a rag to pull out the syringe or whatever from the trash can.
The most colorful trash in the world. He's like, I love Smallville for this, but anytime it's even just trash, it's like crumpled a bunch of like neon paper in there and kids will love it.
It's the computer lab. They're printing out all kinds of colorful things.
Yeah. So many crafts.
So the investigation continues.
Yes.
About Jordan. Clark's there banging away the computer. Chloe comes in and is like, oh, hey, guess what I found? Oh, never mind. You know, as we mentioned. Yep. And he's found more information. I think this is where he actually mentions the roller coaster or whatever.
And the, like, mom died the same day of the meteor shower and stuff.
Yeah, okay. What is this crap?
I don't know.
She died from a direct hit from a meteor? did she physically get hit?
Because he was also born the day of the meteor shower, too, right? So are we saying, like, mom got hit and we pulled the baby out of her? Or
that's the
he
only
had
thing
just
I
been
assume.
Born and she's just, like, recouping in the hospital? And then,
she died from a direct hit, Matt.
Yeah. Where?
This is... See, when you try to tie kryptonite powers into seeing the future, doesn't make any sense. Like Cassandra in Hourglass, right?
What was her thing? I forget.
A meteor shower crashed in her yard and it was so bright it burned her retinas or whatever, so she was blind. But after that, she could see the future. I'm like, that doesn't...
That's so Vandal Savage-y. Like, magic meteor comes down and gives you this. Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I love the ones, too, where it's just like, oh, yeah, we were passing through town that day of the meteor shower. Oh,
yeah, yeah, our car got hit.
Yeah.
Like, and? Like, what's the catalyst there?
We were on a family road trip. And
so extremely questionable connection for
meteor,
his powers, right?
Yeah.
But she also she drops a John Edwards mention, which, as we know,
so mad.
In the early 2000s, crossing over with John Edwards.
Yeah.
Yes. to the highest level.
Yeah, just the worst. Do you remember he did a 9/11 special?
Oh, no, he did?
Ugh, what a piece of crap, this guy.
That's terrible. Well, you know, in season one, Chloe mentioned Miss Cleo, and now in season three, she's mentioned John Edwards. So I don't know what the next psychic on the list is going to be when we get down the road. But
honestly, thankfully, I think John Edwards killed most of them, which is good.
Yeah, yeah,
like
good.
He just put a bad taste in nationally syndicated psychics' mouths, which is good.
He killed most of them? Did they see that coming? I don't know. Yeah. There's a joke in there somewhere. I don't know. So, but then they're talking and their conversation is interrupted by this commotion going on outside.
Right.
And you think, what's this going to be, like a fight or something? But it's Jordan, and he really wants to walk Macon home, right? And she is not having it. And we've all been there, right? He's like, no, really, I have to walk you home.
Please, I'm defending your honor.
Yeah. This is a real good scene. Yeah.
Yep. His acting is just, it's so desperate and sad, and he knows what he's doing, and he knows why she's saying no, but he just has to try, you know? It's really cool.
And she goes off anyway. She's like, leave me alone, man. And Clark's like, what's going on? He's like, you don't understand, Clark. She's going to die. Because she had, we haven't seen the vision, have we? We see the vision a lot later, but he tells Clark what the vision is. That's what it is. So,
a lot of fire and old signs and stuff, right?
Right. So Clark and Jordan go on a walk. They're going to go to Megan's house, too,
mm-hmm.
which is not what you should do. As Clark even admits later, he's like, I took him to a crime scene. You know? Like, way to go. Puts him on the sheriff's radar. Way to go, Clark. But Jordan did have a line here I liked. I wrote down. He says, this is a mistake. I should have never gone to school. And I used to feel that way every
Aww.
Day.
Replace school with work, and now we're up to date. You know?
Yeah, exactly, right?
Why did I do this today?
But he's explaining the vision, and he's like, oh, there was a fire and smoke, and you know she couldn't breathe. And he brings up to Clark that he's tried to stop these visions. Him and his dad have tried to stop him in the past.
Right.
But they've never been able to until Clark did. So he can change destiny, which is really cool. He says, yeah, I touched you. And he says, quote, you don't have it in. It's like you live forever. So that's the show's interpretation.
Fair
of
enough.
That. So that's fine. It's valid. You
yeah.
know?
And again, gave us stuff to debate, what, 12 years later?
Right.
Or more.
And, you know, I did like, and I always like when Tom Welling has other younger actors to work off of. He does really well with that. Like Ryan in a couple episodes, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The big brother
of Superman.
I was just going to
say. He plays it really well, yeah.
And Jordan, I don't know, let's say he's a freshman, maybe, I don't know. Maybe he went to a K-8 school like you, and then he was homeschooled up to this point. But but yeah, so I'm going to say he looks like an age-appropriate teenager, so let's just say he's a freshman. So
okay.
Mentoring this young kid. Unfortunately, yeah, they go to Megan's house, and the sheriff is there, and he's like, are you Jordan Cross? Need to talk to you, young man. Because she had disappeared on the way home.
Right.
I guess kids walk home at Smallville, I guess, you know.
Sure, miles and miles away, past farms and
yeah, exactly.
acres and acres of corn.
Like, from what I've seen, every kid had a car when they were 15, but sure, whatever.
Yeah, and a nice new product placement car, too, which is nice.
So now he's on the radar, and, you know, his dad shows up, you know. And I like this character. That you're right, he does look rather disheveled and stuff.
Yeah.
But I like the character of his dad because he's a nice mirror to Jonathan. Right, because
mm-hmm.
you think this is what Jonathan would be like if Martha wasn't around, and it's
right.
much says later on in the episode because he's like, oh, you know, this is a mistake, you know, we got to keep this secret, you know, I got to keep it close at home where I could protect him and watch out for him and all that. And I 100% agree. I liked that this kid had a parent in his life, unlike so many other characters in the show, right?
Yep, totally true. And not a creepy parent that's like giving him these powers to see the end of anything. You know, it's just you're right. He's Jonathan Kent without Martha. He's just mm-hmm. a little more skittish and doesn't see like Jonathan tells him later. It was basically Martha that convinced him that, like, you know, he still has to experience the world and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is that other version of what Clark's life could have been.
Absolutely. And he has like, I don't know, three or four small scenes, but
mm-hmm.
it wasn't just like, oh, look, there's his dad over there. Like, it's like, no, it's like he's an actual character and influences his decisions. And I like that because
yep.
it's a lot more true to, you know, what it's like being a kid than all these other kids just going around doing whatever with no supervision, no parents whatsoever. So we cut to the Talon, and Chloe has come to talk to Lana about Adam being a druggie.
Right.
And she says, I know that you and Adam have been spending a lot of time together. And it's like, again, like, what is their relationship?
Right.
Like,
making out, playing
it?
Cards, what are we doing?
Are they not sure how old he's supposed to be? Is that where they're being weird about stuff? Like, that's the only thing I can assume.
But at this point, too, with all the different clues we're getting. They've abandoned the maybe we'll make him Batman thing, right?
Maybe.
Presumably.
You know, well, you know, Batman knows a lot about music, right? So we cut to our next scene, and he's playing Rachmaninoff.
Yes.
You know, which is a very classic, as Lex points out, you know, it's a very hard tune to play. His hardest piece.
Yeah.
Rhapsody on a theme of Paganini.
Ah,
43
sure.
By Rachmaninoff.
That old favorite.
And I believe this song is in Somewhere in Time, starring Christopher Reeve and Jane
starring
Seymour.
Starring Christopher Reeve, yeah.
Yeah, which is a very romantic
and
love
Mrs.
story.
Teague. You're
Mrs.
Right.
Mrs. Teague, Virgil Swan.
Yep.
And Genevieve Teague.
Genevieve Teague. Solitaire herself.
Tale as old as time between those two. But anyway, yeah, really. That song's featured. I mean, it's when you hear classical music, that's like one of the generic rotations of classical music. But Adam is just playing it on the piano, you know.
Yeah, Moonlight Sonata, you know, whatever.
Now, to your point, he does say, oh, my parents would have killed for a piano like this, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, is he not Bruce
Wayne?
That
was my thing.
I don't know. But maybe he's that failed Darren Aronofsky script Bruce Wayne where he grows up on the top of a...
Thank God we never saw that movie. Yeah.
Terrible.
Yep. He's,
The mechanic's name is Al, right? Mm-hmm. That's Alfred. And then he has a ring that says T.W. Thomas Wayne. And when he punches people, it leaves a bat shape on their head. Like,
I didn't know that.
Seriously,
that's
people.
Gross.
Like, that is 90s superhero interpretation at its worst.
Yeah.
So
thank God Frank Miller never made that movie with him.
Oh, my gosh. But anyway, this is a nice scene between Adam and Lex. He's like, I thought we should meet. And he slides this file across the piano. That's like such a slick move.
Yep.
And it's like his school records or something, right? But there's something suspicious about him, right, Matt?
Yes, there's straight A's in all this, right? And all these teachers have glowing reports and pretty much say the same thing.
They say the same thing verbatim. Quote, a fine people and a joy to teach.
Right.
So Lex finds it very suspicious. So, you know, because Bruce Wayne, he's undercover, right? He doesn't want people to know who he is.
Of course.
He's paid off all these teachers, you know? I mean, it makes perfect sense. It still tracks to me. So.
And Lex is just doing his adult... Like, this always feels like the adults are talking scene. Where it's just... Like, there's no kids here. Like, let's just be, you know, menace and business and all that. But, yeah, I guess... If he's just lying, I guess it could still be Batman. Why is he shooting up, though?
Well, with Venom. You know, he's got an experiment. He wants to become stronger. He's testing his limits as he's training, you know.
As is comic canon, you're right.
He's heard about this Venom. He's trying it out. It's making him more powerful, you know. Mm-hmm. But the side effect is the mood swings. And it all makes sense.
Okay, man, I'll go with it. I would have taken that.
So Jordan is hiding from his dad at this point. You know, Clark and his dad have this conversation, and... Clark's
really,
trying to convince him.
Really
like,
nice
hey.
Conversation.
Yeah. It really is a nice conversation. Yeah. And you feel for this dad. Because obviously, you know, he's a single dad. He's trying to raise his kid with this crazy gift. He doesn't know how to handle it. He's doing the best he can, as Jonathan tells him later.
Right.
But Jordan is like, he runs away because he doesn't want to be taken out of school. He wants to be part of society. And you understand, especially as a teenager, you know, that you value that kind of stuff. Nowadays, I'm like, ah, it's fine. Whatever. But when you're a kid, you want to be around other kids.
You can't go out this weekend. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, thank God.
Good.
Jordan is, I guess, hiding out at Smallville High School, as we find out in a bit. But it's night now, so again, days and whatever. Not that the timeline really matters in a day like this. And more rather than like Whisper, where we got Clark going blind, getting sunglasses, getting glasses, not getting glasses in the span of 2.5 days. But it's just having fun with the Smallville timeline. So Adam meets Lana at school. For some reason, she asked him to meet her there, even though he lives at her place of business. which was odd to me. Did you notice this? Like when they first walk up to each other, it looks like he's like tries to kiss her, but she kind of brushes her hair. Like,
no, I didn't see that.
And like dodges it. Again, it's the vagueness of like what is going on here.
What
like,
are we? Yeah.
Not even like a, you know, maybe just a peck on the cheek. Maybe even not even. You know,
but that's weird too for friends in high school.
Because he's just kind of like, you know, moves it. It's just
weird.
Yeah,
I've got my iPad here. I'm trying to pull it up.
If you watch it, yeah. So pull it off and see what you think. But they kind of have a conversation here, and she's like, "Look, so she doesn't sell out Chloe, so she's actually a good friend." She's like,
right.
"Someone saw you, you know, shooting a needle or whatever. Like, are you diabetic? Are you, you know?" She's trying to give him the benefit of the doubt.
That is a little.
You looking up there?
Almost like he did. Yeah.
Yeah, she got that. Oh, you know, I was like, "Oh, yeah. She's mad." It's like when your girlfriend's mad at you today, like, oh, all right, well.
Or Summerholder was just like, he saw his shot and he wanted to take it.
He was like, ah, Kristen Couric, you know.
Yeah, he wasn't married to Twilight yet.
Yeah, so But the end of the scene, this is exactly what I'm talking about. He says, I want this to work. What is this?
Right, what?
What is working? What is not working, right?
Our friendship, our landlord relationship.
What is this scene?
I proposed to you. What happened?
And then he's like, you know what? If you want to be gone, I'm gone. Whatever. And he walks off. And again, think about, let's zoom out for a second. Spoilers, right?
Okay.
He is really here, all Batman jokes aside. He's really here because Lionel wants him to get close to Lana.
Right.
Find out what she knows about Clark.
Right.
Too bad he picked the wrong friend. Lana's the last person to know anything about him.
But meanwhile, he also had this disease, right?
Well, but that's part of it, right? In order to like get this treatment, you know, he's got to keep this thing going with Lana because he has the same kind of liver disease that Lionel has and they're experimenting and all this. But here's the thing. I think in almost every episode, he's been like, "What, you know, whatever. Lana, if you want me around, I'm leaving." I'm like, what? Is that some kind of like ultimatum you know she's not going to accept? But what if she was like, okay, good, get out.
Probably. Yeah, maybe he's doing that like very macho grossness, but like maybe he's doing that, oh, if I tell her no, she'll just beg for it.
Right, exactly. You know, that's the only thing I can assume based off like that, he needs to stay in contact with her.
That common but shitty outdated mentality, yes.
So he walks, you know, angrily away and bumps into Jordan, right? So we can get the we don't see what Jordan sees, but we see he
got
a flash.
What does Jordan see? Yeah.
What does he see? But we'll talk about
that. Well, he
says
something later, yeah, but curious.
But now we had just, again, contrivance. We had to get, that's why we're at the school, you know, and I'll say this, I really do enjoy this episode. I think it's moving along and it's very, like, pulls you in,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I'm enthralled with it. It's engaging, I should say. As opposed to Delete, which unfortunately was a lot more boring than I remember.
I can't wait till I just remember it as being so crazy.
So, but again, there's so much contrivance here.
Right.
Right. There's so much contrivance. For example, right? Lana bumps him to it again. We see that her destiny has changed, right? He's like, oh, no, it's changed.
Yes.
We see Lana, she's tied up in this house. It's burning, you know? And that just, again, this showed you that in Smallville, nothing is set because Clark being around these people changes destiny continuously.
Right.
So that gives them a great out about any kind of future, or it's like, hey, man, it's fluid, you know? So,
yep.
I'll take it. Talk about contrivance here. The coach shows up, right? Oh, we don't know it's the coach, but we know it's the coach, right? He's wearing a ski mask and gloves, and he
very creepy.
Kidnaps Lana.
Why
did he have to, like, he works there. He could get there. I don't know, whatever. But if he was going to kill himself, why go to the point of disguise? Anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So, yep.
But see, we had to, you know, if Jordan had seen who he was, he would have told Clark, oh, it's the coach so-and-so, and that would have been real simple. So
yeah. Good point.
Meanwhile, I don't know what Adam is doing. Oh, you know what? This is a golf clap. Golf clap to the writers. Adam is at school, meaning Lara. So that is why he's not at home when Chloe comes to go snoop around.
Yep. And yeah, and Chloe and Lex meet up. You're right.
Yeah. I like that. So she's snooping around. Why he has this very, like, precious vial of his, like, just under his bed all by itself? Dude, like, come on. That's
maybe he knocked
stuff.
It over. You know, he was crazy at night and
I'll
kicking
give
landlords
the,
and stuff.
The back and forth justification is fun.
Yeah.
So she finds this vial, but then as she does, Lex comes in, and he's like, oh, I thought breaking and entering was a serious offense. And she's like, I could say the same thing to you. He's like, yeah, but I own the place. So that's a perfect, what we have here is a perfect Lex-Lois conversation.
Yes,
you know?
Very much. Totally.
Yeah. And their whole playing off each other, like, they're suspicious about Adam for different reasons. I like how she was like, well, what tipped you off? And he's like, Rachmaninoff. he's like, there's no CDs, no radio, no sheet music. Like, it's very suspicious that he's
no
like this
talent
master
mix?
Musician.
Where is it?
Where's the latest talent mix?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're kind of playing off each other for a bit, and he's like, lock up on your way out.
Loved that. It's game recognizes game, you know? It's like, I'm not going to, yeah. He is always menacing towards her, or just these scenes, you know, rewatching it with you, really. I love the menace that he brings with her because it's not like Lionel or anything. It's just like, he is clearly always the more powerful one. She keeps control of herself as much as she can, but there's always that thought like he could squash her like a bug at any second.
So we cut to Jonathan and Clark talking in the barn, and this is a great scene. This kind of crystallizes what we're talking about Jordan's dad, you know, because he's like, well, you know, when you have a child and they have special gifts, your tendency is to want to keep him close and, you know, hide him from the world. And he's like, well, that's not what you did. He's like, well, no, that's what I wanted to do, but right. Your mother, you know. Because Martha, I like that about Smallville. Like, you understand, they were like, you understand their three-dimensional characters.
Yeah.
You know? Like, Jonathan here, he's like, you got to be safe, son. I'm just a simple farmer kind of guy, right? And Martha's like, no, I come from Metropolis. I'm sophisticated, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, speaking of Lois and Clark, it's actually very similar on you guys' show. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very different characters, and they're like, they're not this nebulous old couple like they sometimes are in the comics. Like, they have distinct personalities, and they play off each other very well.
No, you're absolutely right. And like Lois and Clark on Smallville, the Kent scenes are often some of my favorite stuff. Like, later on, he's got a nice, Clark's got a nice scene with Martha, too. But yeah, I always love on Lois and Clark and on this show, like, they're his sounding board. He trusts them. He trusts their opinion, and he won't always agree with it, but he'll always go to them. It's mm-hmm. it's just part of the character that I like very much. But I'm also very close with my parents, so I kind of like and I'm an only child, so it's mm-hmm. Definitely a recognizing
only child for the win.
Yeah, right. Oh, go team, man. Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's right.
I forgot.
That's right. I'll have to share. but yeah, completely like off topic. Because you're an only child, mm-hmm. right? I have discussion a lot with people. Do you just want to have one child yourself, or do you want to have like a big family?
I could see two. I could see a boy and a girl. Because
that's exactly what I say. I say two is the limit. Because one, I'm like, you got to pay for college. You got to pay for clothes. You got to pay. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm just calculating the cost. I'm like, look, I'm one person. I turn out just fine. I can handle one. Two.
You know, two's crazy to me. And also, I don't understand the sibling dynamic, which I assume you
don't absolutely.
Completely either. So there's part of me that's like, well, if I make two, they could gang up on me. I don't know if I want to do that.
That's true. You want to be outnumbered, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I'm like the Lex. I'm like, oh, let me clone somebody to be my brother, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and we say it now because we want to be nice. But like, if our kid doesn't like Superman or Batman, like, it's just going to... that's. What are we going to talk to it about?
Well, then we have failed them. That's our
fault. I know. Well, yeah, you're right.
So
it's up to
you
us.
Grew up on a steady dose of Batman the Animated Series in Smallville. Yep. So, but talk about convenience here. We're talking about, there's so much convenience this whole episode, right? Mm-hmm. Contrivance. Jonathan's like, all right, come on over for dinner, son. And Clark's like, okay, I'll be right there. But then Jordan shows up at his barn. How does this guy, you know, I would say normally I would complain about this guy. Like, how does he show up at all these places? It's established he's a very good runner. So.
Oh, that's right.
Golf.
And he enjoys it. Well done, Shaw. Well done, Chuck.
To the Smallville writers. He explains that, you know, Lana's destiny changed. You know, she sees her in the, he sees her in this kind of fire in the same place Megan was in, you know.
Right.
She was kidnapped at the school, and Clark's like, okay, what can he remember? And he's telling these little details. There's pictures, but they're younger and cheerleading, and there's like this. And he mentions some location sign that he saw.
Yeah,
like, I know where that is.
Whatever, yeah.
But he lets him come with him, which is, like, what are you doing, Clark? Like, tell him, like, clearly the guy knows something is different about you, Clark, right? Just mm-hmm. tell him to jump on your back and super speed over there. Because the time you're wasting to show up in a truck is, like, I mean, these people are being burned alive, right?
No, absolutely.
And because this other kid wants to come with you, your lives are in danger. So I don't know. That if I were Clark, I'd be like, all right, jump on, kid. Yeah.
Even worse, like, okay, I haven't explained this to you yet. I will. I have to go do this, and I have to do it, you know, my mm-hmm. way. And he should just zoom off all the time and every other episode of the show. Exactly. And at least here, he doesn't have to come up with some excuse or, like, leave Chloe just in the dark, like, Clark. Mm-hmm. At least he can give a little preface of, like, I promise I'll come home, go talk to my parents, they'll fill you in, it's great. But
you know how I said, you know how you told me I was immortal? It has something to do with that, but just stay here, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
So then we get the coach, and he has this altar to his daughter, which is really creepy. What is with this show and people's, like, obsession altars?
Yeah, you know, like, I know what you mean.
Lex has some. People have some about Lex. You know, it's weird.
I see it, like, when you first, like, lose somebody. I don't know about your family, but we put the pictures up. Every free space has the picture. But at some point, you got to take that down, you know?
Well, he put it in this abandoned...
Yeah, in a
like
basement.
Was this their house? Like, I was
right. Why is he putting it down there to go think about her there? Wouldn't it be her bedroom or something?
We get a close shot of the daughter, Julia, right?
Right.
Okay. Does she not look exactly like a young Katherine Heigl?
Oh wow, that's funny. Mm-hmm. I would have to go back and look, but that's interesting. I thought she just looked like really young. Or maybe it's because I'm looking at 25-year-olds playing 16-year-olds. Maybe she's actually accurately young. And
well, those aren't all pictures of her being in eighth grade. I mean, true, from her whole life, I assume. But I'm like, this girl, like, was Katherine Heigl, like, just a stock photo person?
Oh, that's funny.
And her, I don't know, but I swear to God, like, she looks exactly like, I'll post a picture of it.
Please do, yeah.
But I thought, like, okay, this is Katherine Heigl's first on-screen appearance. I don't know how old she would be back then. I guess she was... No, she wouldn't have been that young. That's what I'm saying. If she was just in some stock photo system in Canada or something.
Yeah, I'm now like...
I thought so.
Putting together in my mind that her character on Grey's Anatomy was a model too. So I'm like, did they take that from... Oh, man. It'd be amazing.
Look up the picture. Let me know.
I'm looking it up now. Oh, totally. Yeah, okay. It went very quickly there. But yeah, I get it. The cheeks, the eyes, the smile. You're right.
Something about it, man. So, huh. Anyway, so... Rest in peace, young Katherine Heigl. But Clark and Jordan show up in the truck, so they go in there. The coach's like, kid, all right, tries to stop him. Clark just throws him 20 feet and gets him out of the way. He was going to go saving Lana first, right? Lana tells him to save the other girl, but Clark ignores her and saves Lana instead, as you know, as we see in The Dark Knight. Going after Rachel!
Rachel!
Rachel, no! These are people tied up with, like, buckets of gasoline, you know, fire. I'm like, you know, I get some Dark Knight vibes.
And honestly, it's, like, really cinematic end to this. I always remember this as, like, he saves her from a burning building at one point, and it's awesome. You know?
Yeah, this is well done. You know,
yeah,
like,
there's no CGI fire or anything. Like, it feels real. It's good.
Yeah, you know, we joke about stuff like the CGI cape and whatever, but this is all tangible, legit, really good stuff here. So the house is, you know, starting to fall apart or whatever, and Jordan comes in. Clark told him to stay in the car, but he comes in, and he does help because he saves the other girl. He saves Megan.
Take that giant coat off, though, when you walk into a fire, dude.
Yeah, man, like, I get the, yeah, I guess, is that, does he wear that to, like, keep people from touching him, maybe?
I assume,
like, he doesn't
touch
through the clothes? I mean, that's the only way I can assume he's wearing it. He's borrowing Adam's trench coat.
Right.
So Clark gets Lana out of there. Jordan, like, unties Megan or whatever and gets her out of the building. But the coach kind of pops up and he's like, I just want to be with my daughter. Well, if I just stay there and burn alive yourself, why are you burning these poor girls to death? Do you have to do it this way? Like,
that's
what
I'm saying. It's a big jump from killing yourself and being mad to I'm taking these two girls with me.
Like, that's got to be the worst way to die, you know?
Yeah.
Burning alive.
Also, you're right. Painful and horrible and you suffocate and whatever else.
Wow. Jordan is fighting the coach here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like that we see flashes of the coach's now death because it's as
it's
happening.
Yeah, as he's touching.
Isn't that really
him?
Cool?
Yeah.
And but yeah, because this is it for the coach, and that's a good way to show us that he's gonna die here, but we don't need to see him like blow up.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan kind of like I think they both kind of pass out, but Clark runs back in and saves him. Clark does make an attempt to find the coach. We make it a point because Superman.
He does. Yeah.
You know, no child or teacher left behind.
Beyond me, but yeah.
Well, yeah, he could easily have picked them both up, but but hey, there's a lot going on. So
they agreed. It's the heat of the moment. He's in high school. It's fine.
Young Superman in training, right? So he's carrying Jordan. They're walking away, and then this house blows the hell up, does it not?
It looks awesome. And again, it's just I love practical, thoughtful superpowers. I love when there's a big explosion. They do it a lot in the series, and Clark is just over, you know, that person. He's there. He's just, you know, defending him and protecting that person as much as he can. It's the Superman moment. It's so cool.
Absolutely. And they had some great coverage on this, too. It reminds me of when they blew up the greenhouse in Season 1's Craving, Adams, where they just, like clearly, like, all right, guys, get all the cameras on this. This is very expensive, and it's blown up once.
All the cameras, all the gasoline. We got one go. Yep.
Yeah. And this was slow motion was well used here, and it was just a great set piece to end the episode on as a climax. So
totally.
But we do have a plus one for Smallville High School faculty death because Coach Altman is dead.
Yep.
And because Jordan seems to have, you know, Clark pretty much does some CPR on him and revives him, you know, just the whole what he did to Lex, right?
Right.
He would have died. And so this seems to have canceled out his ability, which is interesting.
Fine.
Because there are no rules. So let me cut to Luther Mansion. Lex is enjoying the new set extension of the upstairs of the library. Right, they're using that a lot more this season, I've noticed. He's there on his laptop, and we have a plus one for close that laptop. Now, that was a category.
That's a thing? That's funny.
Yeah, that's a thing. So Corey Moore, who does a lot of our R&D on the spot. Well, whenever there's a random category that comes up.
I recognize the name from listening.
He goes and does the research, you know.
Yep.
And this is a category that he suggested, and This is our, well, we'll get into the tally board, but whenever someone walks in and like smells and like closes their laptop, yeah. Like, oh, hey, what's going on?
Is it the, oh, you've said something interesting and I'm going to stop my work now and listen to you? Or
no, it's the, oh, I'm walking something I shouldn't.
I literally just saw it on the thing. That's funny. Sorry, the Hulu was playing on my iPad
iPad
and it
is
looked
good,
over and Lex closes his laptop.
The iPad is a good tool to have there.
Yeah, it's nice.
For reference. So, yeah, that's what it is. Like, oh, hey, I shouldn't be looking at this.
Right.
I shouldn't know I am, so I close it. So that's a plus one for that. Lex and I have this conversation, and it's interesting. Lex is researching Adam. I'll take a screenshot of this dude and post it, of like his file or whatever. I don't know what Lex's intentions are here, because at first he was like, we need to get rid of this guy, but now he's like interested in him. I think Lex is all about mysteries and obsession.
Yeah,
so
he smells a weird thing. So he's
Because Lana comes to him almost to say like, hey, I think everybody was right. Who did I let into my life? Good question,
right.
Lana. You should have asked that before you let him move into your freaking business. And she's about to cut ties with him, but Lex is like, oh, he's been through a lot.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Let's just give him a break. You know, I went through a lot recently and I would appreciate it, you know. So I think manipulating it just to keep Adam around to kind of solve the mystery, I guess, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And again, too, I think it's even more telling to him that he goes to snoop around and Chloe's there doing the same thing for a different, a different clue. So at this point, I assume he's emptying a room somewhere in the mansion and blowing up giant pictures of Adam and, you know, family photos and scraps of paper, that type of thing. It's
like, ooh, parents murdered in Crime Alley. Let's
yeah.
See.
Oh, see?
So we cut to Jordan and Clark, and this is Jordan pretty much spelling out what had been implied in the last scene that, you know, had Clark not revived him, he would have died.
Right.
And that seems to have canceled out his ability. So, and he also mentions that he saw his mom in a near-death experience, and that actually tracks with in the future on Smallville in season five, when everybody starts, you know, shooting up to, you know, have near-death experiences.
Right. I forgot about that.
A void in season five. Lana sees her parents, you know, and I'm curious, when I get to that episode, did they use the same actors they did in the pilot? I'd be impressed if they did, but,
yeah.
You know, they're kind of day players,
I doubt 50-50. It. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
How many people have played Chloe's mom on this show? But anyway.
Right.
And then, you know, Lex sees his mom, Clark sees Jonathan. That's a great moment. But anyway, that completely unintentional, but it does the rules of this universe, right? Where you're in near-death experience, you see your deceased loved one. So, but then Lana shows up. And she's got his homework to be like, God, what a buzzkill.
Yeah, you
suck. And I did like Clark's comment to Jordan. He's like, oh, I see you. You're figuring out this high school thing. You know, he's going to teach her how to run. She's going to teach him how to do homework.
Yeah, it is. But it's also like the way that Clark looks at him, it's like, oh, good. You're moving in on my lady now, too. Congratulations, man. You know, you're getting high school. We all have to be obsessed with Lana and do math.
It's a rite of passage.
Yeah.
Some level of high school. So
now this is at the Kent house, right?
No, this is Jordan's house.
This is Jordan's. That was a big question, because later on, I thought the next scene with Martha was just like another room and she was making cookies for the study party.
Right.
And then with the end of the episode, I'm like, does that make any sense?
That took a dark turn, the study
party.
But see, here's the thing, like, Clark leaves.
Okay.
And usually when Clark leaves, the scene ends, but it keeps going.
Yeah.
And it's Lana and Jordan talking. He's like, hey, so your friend Adam, he's from Oklahoma? And she's like, yeah, I don't know. He doesn't really mention it. I'm like, are you serious? Like, you ask these questions now.
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, something bad happened to him. And she's like, yeah, he was in a really bad accident lately. And he's like, no, actually, I think he died. And we're like, whoa. Because as we know, when Bruce Wayne's parents got shot, Bruce Wayne died and Batman was born. Right. So that tracks perfectly.
Okay. You're saying they could have, if WB came down, they could have saved it. And you're probably right. Yeah.
Ceased to be Anakin Skywalker and became Darth Vader.
What are Adam's thoughts on sand, though? We really should have gotten into that.
It's interesting here because, like, this is the guest star of the week is, like, speaking to, like, a mini arc in the season.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing about season 3. They do a really, you know, it's hit or miss sometimes. Like, with Whisper, I feel like it was way too busy. But they do make an attempt to tie, like, everything together. I do at least appreciate that. What's she going to do with this information? Who knows? I don't really remember.
No, but you're right. It's cool that they took advantage of, we've got this character for this one episode with this power. Let's use it to advance this story, too.
And I like the character of Jordan. I like the actor of Joseph.
Yeah.
Both named Cross.
Cross.
Although, since his power is gone, not really any point to ever bring him back.
Right, yeah.
Which is a shame, because he was like,
sorry,
a character, but like, sorry, we got stories to tell here. If you can't bring anything to the table, you got to sit this one out. So.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have minded seeing him again, but I could think of no purpose he could have served.
He's got no secrets. He's got no lies. He's pointless anymore. He's just to get rid of him.
So then we cut to the Kent farm. As you said, Martha's making cookies, as she does.
Yep.
And
giant, great-looking cookies, too, man.
Yeah, I know. I really want to go get a chocolate chip cookie now. And they're talking about, you know, Destiny and all this stuff. And this is Clark realizing. Me saving the coach the first time put three more lives in danger. And Martha's like, oh, well, you know, think of all the times you saved me or your dad or Lex. She specifically mentions Lex.
And he's become a really good friend. Yeah,
and she's like, come on, Martha. Like, you guys are terrible judges of character. But I think about this, and that's the great thing about Smallville. Like, this is a great, like, overarching thing of the whole show, right? Mm-hmm. Had Clark not saved Lex in the pilot, right, he would have died. He wouldn't have brought the world to the brink of nuclear destruction.
Right,
as
to its knees.
But then Clark is also there to stop him, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like they have this, like, symbiotic relationship of, like, you know, salvation and destruction. And that's, like, heavy,
cool.
Big picture. That's big, that heavy,
I know,
big picture stuff. But
it's there,
you know,
though. Yeah, it's totally there, though. I also thought, too, you were going to say the nice thing about this early show. You don't have to hit it over the head every time, but when he does have these little conversations with his parents, you just go, like, oh, yeah, that's just pushing him a little bit more. Like, she understands already, like, you're going to keep saving people, and you're not going to be able to do it all the time, but it's about, you know, doing what you can do. I also like that she says maybe he was sent here to change destiny, which, again, like, is very a lofty mom thing to say, but it's cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a little, on Clark's part, it's a little presumptuous. Like, no, you're just sent here because your planet blew up. But,
right.
You know.
Oh,
but
does
I like,
he say that, or does she?
Yeah, he says that.
Never mind, I don't like it anymore.
Check your iPad, man, I swear.
Yeah, sorry.
The thing about that is, it is cool because he's not from here. He operates outside of the rules of, like, destiny or whatever.
Right.
Because I do, like, where do you stand on, like, time travel? Like, my favorite kind of time travel is predestination paradox. Like, Terminator 1, right?
Sure.
Like,
when it
nothing can ever be changed. Like, the time travelers create the future they came from.
So
right, like
in
that
way, like, Back to the Future is wrong, I think. But yeah, if you go back in time to save yourself, that always happened.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
Back to the Future has different rules. There's so many
not
different
the,
rules
like,
of time travel.
Though I love it for a movie, but when
if time continues
Doc
on this present
the,
course.
Oh man, we talked about so much time travel this season with Lois and Clark too. That's funny.
So that's I like that, because I think if time travel ever really existed, it would have to be that way. Otherwise, history would continue to be rewritten,
right?
Or we'd have infinite parallel universes. So,
are we
so
saying
I like
Legends
that.
Of Tomorrow isn't accurate?
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Right, but again, I want it to be like that. There,
oh, of course, of course.
To, that's the fun.
I just thinking like my preferred version, which makes story. You have to be a little more creative storytelling to be like, okay, we're going back in time, but we always went back in time. We were always there,
right.
And it's always happening, et cetera, et cetera. So this is Smallville establishing it. That is what the rules are of this universe, right? But Clark being a random element can change those things.
Right.
So that's what makes it interesting. Since he's not from, that's the only explanation. He's not from here, so he can affect fate.
No, that's
cool.
Wasn't
his purpose, though. Like, he wasn't sent here to do that. He was sent here to rule them with strength. Didn't you read the message in the spaceship? Anyway.
But then not really. I was kidding for 7 years.
Right, yeah.
I love you, son. Yeah.
Hey, show runs for 10 years, you know, things change.
I know.
No, absolutely. I'm right there with you. So Martha has all these great cookies, you know. Clark goes to take him out to Jonathan.
Make sure a few of them make him out to the barn.
Yeah, that's a total mom thing to say.
Yeah.
You know, makes it out to the barn. He just sees this equipment just kind of running by itself. He looks around. His dad is collapsed on the floor.
It's creepy.
Right? And Jonathan, he's like, he kind of knows what he's like, not now, not yet,
not
ready.
Now. Yeah.
He's like, I love you, son. I'm like, oh, damn. Like, this is like... I remember this happened. I was like, whoa, are they going to kill Jonathan right now?
Yep.
Because that's part of the mythology of, you know, Superman.
Some of them, yeah. That was always the question, whether they were going to do it.
That and a tornado, right, Matt?
Yeah. Well, not yet, thankfully. No, but I remember that, you know, when he talked to Jor-El, that was always, I mean, it put it in my mind even as a kid of like, oh, okay, maybe we're going to lose Dad at some point here.
So this is what Mark Verheyen, the writer, had to say about this. Mm. We had talked about it as early as season one. We came very close to using it in season two. Fever started off as the one where he'd have the heart attack instead of Martha getting hurt, right? The idea that he made a deal with Jor-El meant it wasn't just a, quote, one day I was out in the tractor and I fell off story. Giving him the heart attack was a really great way to amp up the stakes with Jonathan and show how far this family would go to protect their son. So a couple thoughts on that. I like how it's... I prefer the heart attack angle when it's random, when it's completely out of anyone's control, right? Because that's Superman the movie.
Superman the movie.
Powers.
The perfect.
Nothing I can do.
Perfect moment. Yeah.
Like, you can do whatever you want, but you can't stop just, you know, the nature of life, right?
If your mom gets cancer, she's got to go to the hospital. You know, like, nothing you can do.
And that's an important lesson for him to learn. You can't save everyone, you know?
Yep.
So that's why I do prefer the heart attack. I mean, if I, you know, had to choose one, right? I don't mind the tornado. I know everybody jokes about it. I don't really mind it like everybody else. That's his own conversation.
I do not like the tornado.
Does Jonathan walk in the walk that he talks, man?
I know. But
okay, give him credit. Maybe.
Mm. I'm more upset at Superman's reaction in that scene.
But here's the thing here, right? It's like his health is bad because he took Clark's powers, right? But we see so many other people take Clark's powers, and it never affects them this way, right?
Maybe
it's because he's older and has his prone to heart condition, maybe?
That, and he did get them in a weird way. I mean, I almost said fortress. It wasn't the fortress, but he was given to them by ancient alien technology, right? We're saying? So maybe there's something there as to, like, almost instead of getting it from, like, a link or something, he went directly to the source and downloaded, like, from it. So maybe, and also, I always loved, too, that Jor-El kind of warns him, like, this might...
Are you willing to do anything to get your son
exactly.
back?
This might not go well for you eventually.
And he's like, for my son, I'll do anything. Like, oh, man. Don't we all want to have dads like that, right?
But then, yes. Now I'm just thinking, like you're saying, it should be more random. Because in a weird way, Jor-El is directly responsible or has played a part in Jonathan's death here.
But then that's the thing. Clark carries this guilt. And he even says, even up to season 10, he feels guilty because he... ran away, his dad had to get the powers to get him back, and that's why he's, you know, died
then,
early, had a
because
heart attack. And then he changed fate
too.
Again.
Yeah, yeah.
You had two strikes on that, Clark, so, so that's my issue with that. But anyway, in a vacuum, this is a very powerful scene.
Agreed. And just seeing that the saw going and the wood shaking, like, off the side of it, that's just unnerving in and of itself.
Like, something is wrong here.
Yeah, right? If you ever worked with the saw, you know, like, don't leave it running and walk away. That's not something you're supposed to see, you know?
So great scene. I'm going to totally undercut everything we talked about here and say the way Clark yells, like, Mom!
Mom!
Yeah. Mom! That's such a high school thing. Like, very. Like a kid, like, Mom! You know, like, something went wrong. Mom! Like,
but again, those are some of the moments I like in the show. He's Superman, but at the same time, he's a 16-year-old kid who's terrified.
Still needs his mom.
Yeah, he's horrified.
Absolutely.
You're awfully quiet today.
Having someone tell you you can change destiny is a lot to handle.
Yeah, Jordan's visions really struck a chord.
Well, I just brought up questions I had all along. Mom, by helping Mr. Altman, I put 3 other lives in jeopardy.
But you were there for them.
If it wasn't for me, he would have never had the chance to hurt anyone.
Clark, what's this really about?
Just wondering if that's why I was really sent here. To change destiny. What if I make a wrong choice and I'm not there to make it right?
It's a huge responsibility. You have to concentrate on the good that you do. Think of all the people you've saved. Your dad, me, and Lex. He's turned out to be a really good friend. Sweetheart, you just have to do the best you can. You can't save everybody.
Hereafter got an 8.6 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 4.5 out of 5. So, Matt, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Hereafter?
I've got B- written down here, which is a little bit lower, but I feel like around that same area. I like the Hereafter stuff. I like the idea of the story. And then it just becomes an half an Adam episode in the middle there. Where I lose it. But the rest of it is great. And again, as a kid, seeing the cape blew my mind, you know? And it does open all these questions and debates I enjoy having with people like you about what does destiny mean and death to Superman. So that saves it quite a bit. But yeah, B-, I'd say.
Smallville forces you to ask the big questions.
Right, yeah, always.
Yeah, as for me, I think I'm going to go with B.
Okay.
As you get the cape really... I mean, you cannot overstate the importance of that.
It's
in this
so
episode.
Stupid, but it is,
You know, the music off the top, Five for Fighting, you know, all these little elements, the Lex-Chloe interplay, you know, the great guest star, you know?
Yeah.
Joseph Cross, as opposed to Jordan Cross. And there are lots of little contrivances here, but because they do so many other things really well, I'm going to say they all kind of bounce each other out, and I'm going to go with a B. So B- from you,
yep.
B from me. Let's get into the tally board. So we have a plus one for they shut that laptop. It's our first instance of it being on the show. So thanks, Corey, for that category. You made it. I was looking out for it. It said, ever since you sent me that email about it, I was looking out for the next one, and here it is. So that's eight. Would you like to know where the other seven were?
Yes, please.
Yep. me too. I ask you that as I'm like making sure I saw the email open. Okay.
No problem. So you want to give me that again?
No. Let's keep it in. We don't edit this show.
No, of course not. We've retaken a few things. We're great.
This is live. Number one, Shimmer. Lex shuts down when Clark walks into his office.
Okay.
Stray. Ryan's stepdad shuts down his laptop in the limo, then shoots his girlfriend. One bad dude. This is Corey Moore's descriptions.
Yeah.
Number three, Tempest. Lex shuts down when Lionel walks by, he's
Luthor Corp
coup.
Yeah,
looking at his mom's stocks or something like that.
Yeah.
Plus, Lex shuts down when Dr. Hamilton walks into his office, which is,
something kryptonite.
Sure, something's going on there.
Yeah.
Red. Lex shuts it down when Clark walks into his office. Skinwalker. Yes, Lex shuts down when Lionel walks into his office. I think he's looking at. I believe in that episode, he might be looking at the disc.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cave stuff.
Yeah, cave stuff.
Yeah.
And then calling, Lex shuts down when Lionel comes into his office again. So mainly Lex closing laptops.
Yeah. Because who's looking at nefarious things online? It's Lex Luthor, usually.
Well, it's just so funny because, I'm sitting. Honestly, I don't have, an open door policy, so people can just walk into my home anytime. but if they did, I would just be like, oh, hey. And I'd get up and talk to him and be like, oh, let me,
And I'd also have this practice very smooth.
One smooth motion.
I like this. So we can see each other.
It looks like
we're just reaching for each other. We're miming closing our laptops.
Oh, man. So those are the eight shut that laptop. So that's a retroactive one that has a new one here.
Yeah.
I do want to mention also that we have an... I actually missed one. A product placement Pete. One of our listeners pointed it out. Daryl Daw, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, pointed out that Pete said he would have been spam in a can had he not gotten out of that trash compactor. So we're going to count that as a product placement Pete. So that's a plus one.
Cool. Which episode was that again? Sorry?
That was Whisper.
Whisper.
Where he's bragging to everybody about... how he saved himself or whatever.
Cool.
So that brings us up to five product placement Pete's. So,
yeah, Ella, I feel bad because I put one on that list, the Lana Kills, and there haven't been
any. I'm still waiting for Lana to kill someone else,
look,
Matt.
She's still in pastels. We're in early Lana stages. We have a long way to go with Lana. Wait till Isis,
Yeah, we better have more than one is all I have to say.
Yeah.
hospital visits, plus one, 39. 39 hospital visits so far.
In 50, 40 some episodes, something like that?
Yeah, in the mid-50s right now.
Okay.
So we will eventually, I look forward to the day when we overtake the episode number.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
That'd be awesome.
It'll happen. So that's a plus one. We're at 39. And then we have a Smallville High School faculty death, which is Coach Altman. That's a plus one. So we have four. So far. Wow. Not the first coach to die in a fire, I might add.
No kidding. Wow. Then the principal and somebody else that I'm not remembering.
Who is the other one? Oh, yes, it was the Principal Kwan.
Right.
Got killed by,
run
by
down
Adam Brody.
Into a garage door, yeah.
And then the shop teacher got killed by Jonathan Taylor Thomas with his letter opener.
Okay. Oh, another good small Superman reference in that one, too.
Yeah, So back before it was just from Krypton, Clark made it up himself. Thanks, right. Brian Singer. So final point, Matt.
Yes.
Bechdel test. From what I can tell, Lana and Chloe have a brief scene, but it's about Adam. It's about doing drugs, though. It's not like a relationship thing.
Sure.
So I don't know. To pass or fail, I'll leave it up to you.
Adam is the subject
lean towards
of the conversation.
Fail.
Yeah, I do, too. He is still the subject of the conversation. There.
Right.
Yeah. They would not have been talking about that if it wasn't about him.
All right. Well, it's a Bechdel test fail.
Yeah.
So... As I've been prone to do now since these categories are getting so long, quick recap. Hospital visits, plus one, 39.
Great.
Product pace and pleat, plus one. That's a five. It's retroactive for a couple episodes ago.
Cool.
Smallville High School faculty death, plus one. That's four.
Right.
And then shut that laptop, plus one. Now we have eight. And a Bechdel test fail. So those are your final tallies for this week, guys. Ooh, that was it. See, we were very top heavy in that discussion. About the first hour was the first 15 minutes of the episode, and then we kind of picked up. Well, we had deep things about destiny and fate.
We had
to talk
a lot
about,
to discuss, in general.
Oh man, well that was a fun one.
That was fun, yeah.
Where can people want to hear you talk more about Superman out there, Matt? Where can they hear you?
They can hear me on Lois and Clark, the new podcast of Superman. We're getting rid of our website, but we're on SoundCloud and iTunes and anywhere else where podcasts are sold. And if you're into pop superhero art, check out my account on Instagram, The Daily Knockoff, and I currently have a Society 6 page with some one or two actually Superman things up there too, so take a look.
Yeah, as for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach, that's MoreonZach. I'm also the host of another podcast, Standard Orbit, on the Trek FM network. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. We talk about all things Captain Kirk and the Enterprise, old and new. As for the podcast itself, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville, with one S. Find us on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville. And you can send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com, once again, with one S. Next week, we'll be back on Always Hold On To Smallville talking about Velocity.
Yeah.
That's right. Fast and the Furious. That's a movie plot as an episode. That this stretch of episodes coming up, right? It is movie plot as an episode after movie plot as an episode. Like, this is like, this stretch is what made me think of making this a category, because you got Fast and the Furious with Pete. You have Fatal Attraction or Swim Fan, take your pick.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
With Obsession.
With Obsession.
Yeah. We have John Q, Denzel Washington movie, with Resurrection.
Very
blatantly. You know, so, I mean, that is like... So we really start getting into it here.
Yeah.
And like I said, we could have called today's like Final Destination or Dead Zone, but I think it's just... That's the genre in and of itself.
Yeah,
it's
I think
unfair
you said
to say
best.
They ripped off this one thing.
They went with this trope of it, but it's not directly referencing. It's not like House of Wax or Hangover.
Yes.
Thing. I wonder too, as you go through, if it's a later in the season thing, because I remember House of Wax is later in the season, and I think
they're
the
like,
Hangover
"Oh, we have three
too.
Episodes left."
Yeah, what are we gonna do? Well, WB put this movie out this year, and they'll let us, you know, fake it. So.
We won't get sued,
right?
So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Hangover episode.
No.
So we'll see how well that holds up.
I'd love to be the guest, though. It'd be fun to talk.
Okay. All right. You're here. You're on the air. Congratulations. You're on Fortune.
Cool. I'm going to put that in my calendar like 6 years from now.
Yeah.
All set. Cool.
All right, man. Well, it's been a lot of fun talking to you about Smallville today. But
yeah, thanks for having me, man.
And as I said, we'll be back next week talking about Velocity. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.
I'm not denying for a moment. Time for just another moment, and I'm just dreaming, counting the way.